just for the record. So if I said he was a G and he was not a G, please take this as my apology in advance.
Like we just said, we can't know everything.
I can't know everything!
Especially all this stuff about the 1950s. I don't know. If I know anything about the 1950s, I'm lucky.
I've watched Back to the Future. That's my knowledge of the 50s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to our Riverdale podcast, brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey. I'm a 28-year-old actor and artist. I like brooding anti-heroes, feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere. And our fun fact for this episode is, what car do you have? My car, this is the first car I've ever owned. I got my first car at 27. And she is a 2013 Chevrolet Equinox. And I was like, wait, is it a Chevrolet? I don't know. My sister's trying to get a new car, and my dad has been saying a lot of car brands lately and just being like, you know, one of these. And I'm like, no, I don't know. So I'm like, wait, is that what mine is, or am I just listening to my dad talk about cars too much? She's a 2013 Chevrolet Equinox, and her name is Kida, and she's named after the character It from Atlantis.
It's a perfect name for her.
Yeah, that's her. That's the girl.
Very proud of you for having a car.
Thanks. She's a good girl. She's a good girl.
And my name is Brittany Ray. I'm a 33-year-old artist and writer. I like badass moms and long naps. I'm on Twitter at Britannia, where I can be found attempting to be interesting, and because it's Pride Month, bullying homophobes. And my first car was a Ford Focus, because I didn't want to buy an SUV because I was afraid of SUVs. What an idiot. What an idiot. It was a great car though. Like, she's still kicking around, but I now drive a Ford Escape, and God, I wish it was a hybrid. Mm. I will never buy a gas-powered car again because I live in British Columbia and gas here costs like double what it does for Robin, and I just, yeah. I cannot do it. I cannot, and I will not. But tell Callie that I have had Fords my entire life, and in my opinion, they're a good car.
All right.
Yeah.
I will. I think mostly it's just like what's good and not too expensive and is being sold right now, rather than like getting to have any kind of choice.
Yeah. Whatever she does, tell her to buy it. This is an important tip for anyone who's going to buy a car. Like, haha, any of us owning anything right now. Am I right?
Yeah.
But buy it through Costco.
Mm, okay.
Just trust me on this. If you're getting a car, buy it through Costco. It's the best possible thing you can do, and you get fat stacks off.
I'm going to tell my dad.
Good.
At dinner tonight.
Good. All right. Today we have words to say about episode 710 of Riverdale, American Graffiti.
Yes, and our step-by-step notes for this season were written by Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, who you guys, I'm sure, are very familiar with. She's the best, first of all.
Absolutely.
The title is American Graffiti. It's a 1973 American coming-of-age comedy drama film directed by George Lucas, produced by Francis Ford Coppola. It was set in Modesto, California in 1962, and it's a study of the cruising and early rock and roll cultures popular among Lucas's age group at the time. Through a series of vignettes, it tells the story of a group of teenagers and their adventures over the course of a night. It definitely makes sense for this episode due to the, first of all, the rock and roll stuff, and as well as the cruising. Like, I'm pretty sure. I watched this film in film school and I don't remember a whole lot about it, but I remember liking it, and a lot of it takes place in cars. So this title makes total sense to me.
It's crazy to me that this movie is like what put George Lucas on the map. So he went from like a movie about a single night in cars to f***ing Star Wars.
Correct, right.
That's crazy to me. Men could just leap and jump.
He's like, would you guys take a chance on me?
Exactly.
Would you take a chance on me making a sci-fi film? And they're like, sure, I guess.
I guess. That's crazy.
Toot or boot, Benny?
I'm gonna give it a toot. I really enjoyed this episode. Yeah. I was actually surprised at how much I enjoyed it. Because every once in a while, like, sometimes Riverdale's good for, like, a long stretch of time. So you're like,
yeah,
when's the other shoe gonna drop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's probably not on the level of some of the other shoots that I've given, but I'm going to give this episode a shoot because I loved all three storylines. I had the best time. I laughed so much. I was so happy. And after the episode ended, I was like, that was a great episode. And it's the best episode of the season so far.
Yeah. My wife watched it with me and both of us agreed that it was surprisingly good considering
It's
Riverdale.
Yeah, correct, correct.
Which, like, I say that with so much affection. I love Riverdale. I hate Riverdale. Riverdale and I have a toxic relationship. But that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I want to give at least one episode this season a shoot. And it's going to be this one because so far, it's been the best one. So
if it doesn't get better than this, then I will retroactively give this a shoot. But I want to see.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Let's see. We've got Shoni, Jugatha, and Archie, Reggie, Betty, Veronica, Fangs all in one. Mm-hmm. I was thinking we would, like, sandwich the sort of, like, more serious storylines on the outside and then put the larger fun stuff on the inside.
Ooh, a sandwich.
What do you think? Yeah, exactly. And, like, also we end the episode with the Jughead storyline, so I thought that that would be a good one to end with anyway, unless you want to do Shoni, Jughead, and then all the other stuff.
No, because, like, it's not even, like, the other stuff is bad. The other stuff is really good, but you're right. It is good to pad it out with some of the silly, goofy stuff.
Okay, great. Let's do Shoni first, then.
Okay. Oh, my God, I'm just going to sniffle.
And I still have I'm still sick-esque, thanks to Brittany for handling the notes this episode.
No problem. I'm on the second month of having COVID congestion. So,
yeah.
Not to sound like an annoying person, but guys, still wear your masks. Because Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But I have the worst COVID brain fog and the worst congestion. My God. Okay. Speaking of gay people, Shoni, Tony, Tabitha, Clay, and two other students, who IMDb says are named Tracy Thomas and Jeremy Jackson, we love alliteration, have begun their after-school club Black Athena for Black Students Literature. They are discussing the book Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. Tony and Clay are very complimentary, but Tabitha says she didn't like how critical Ellison is of books written about women by women. Jeremy adds that it seems like the characters of color in this book were written for a white audience as caricatures. Tracy says his writing seemed very angry. Clay replies that this book is written about the Black experience. The teacher present for the club clears her throat disapprovingly.
Like, whatever.
What club do you think you're supervising, dumbass? Everyone notices and Tony changes the topic. At the same time, Cheryl is walking by and sees their club meeting through the window.
So we have, just welcome to Tracy and Jeremy. I honestly, like, before I, like, went to check to see if they had names or anything, I was, like, sort of had the idea that maybe, because, I mean, we've sort of half recast Dilton, we recast Midge, you know, we're recasting people. And so I was like, what if this is Chuck and his girlfriend? I mean, we never met her in the original timeline, but she exists in the comics. And so I thought, wouldn't it be fun if we, like, brought Chuck back, but it was this guy?
Yeah.
You know? Because, like, Chuck in the comics, he would totally show up to something like this.
Oh, 100% he would. Yeah.
Yeah. But I like that Tracy probably feels very at home with the double T club. Tracy Thomas, Tony Topaz, and Tabitha Tate are all here. So, yeah.
Like, the writers were like, we're doing a bit and we're gonna keep it going.
Tease. I looked it up and neither of them are in the comics, so they just said alliterations. Black Athena is a very cool name. Very cool.
It is metal as hell.
Really dope.
Like, imagine being a card-carrying member of the Black Athena Black Literature Club. Oh my God, that's amazing.
So cool. So cool. So Invisible Man is the book that they're talking about. Invisible Man is Ralph Ellison's first novel published by Random House in 1952. It addresses many of the social and intellectual issues faced by African Americans in the early 20th century, including Black nationalism, the relationship between Black identity and Marxism, and the reformist racial policies of Booker T. Washington, as well as issues of individuality and personal identity.
Sounds incredible, and now I want to read it, / am upset that I haven't read it.
I know, I want Clay's list of Black authors.
Yeah, I also want Clay's list!
Yeah, and the book that Tabitha talks about is Their Eyes Were Watching God. It is a 1937 novel by American writer Zora Neale Hurston. It is considered a classic of Harlem Renaissance and Hurston's best-known work. The novel explores protagonist Janie Crawford's ripening from a vibrant but voiceless teenage girl into a woman with her finger on the trigger of her own destiny. Set in Central and Southern Florida in the early 20th century, the novel was initially poorly received. Since the late 20th century, however, it has been regarded as influential to both African-American literature and women's literature. Time included the novel in its 2005 list of the 100 best English language novels published since 1923.
Yeah, this is the one where I'd heard Invisible Man, but this was the one where I was like, oh, I know that one. I know what that one's about.
Yeah, I really liked how, like, when I looked it up in the, like, on the Wikipedia, and it said it was initially poorly received. Like, we see that in this episode, which I thought was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, like, it, you know, we we see some of the, like, Tabitha talks about Ellison himself giving it backlash. So I thought that was interesting how they brought that in.
It's also a great example of how men are allowed to say a lot of the same things that women say, but when women express it through their own lens, especially Black women, they are derided for it.
Yeah.
And, like, you can see that happen in this book club. Like, you can see every time Tabitha brings up something that has to do with gender, Clay shuts her down.
Mm-hmm. Clay, I love you, but he's got such a complex in this,
club. He truly does. Like, you know, Tony keeps it fairly level-headed, but you can very much tell that she and Tabitha are irritated by the fact that Clay not only owns the room, but is speaking over them.
Yeah.
And I love that this show has done really well with addressing these small micro and macro aggressions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. I'm impressed, Riverdale.
I hate to say it.
Yeah. And I also like that Clay isn't just, you know, Clay contains multitudes too. Nobody's perfect. And all we've seen of Clay is like, Clay's the best. Clay's awesome. And I love Clay, but like, I like that he has levels now too.
Oh yeah. It's an awareness of the fact that men will always have that leg up privilege over women. Yeah. And that he's not aware of it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And the staff chaperone is Mrs. Gibbs. I don't know you, Mrs. Gibbs, but I don't care for you.
Like, what did you think was going to happen here, buddy?
Yeah, what's the...
Where are they just not allowed to talk about, like, their own experiences as Black students?
Like, where do you think you are right now?
Exactly.
It's weird.
Just fucking goofy.
And, like, we don't even see Mrs. Gibbs in the other scene either, so, like, Mrs. Gibbs, I don't know.
She dipped. She was like, I don't think I'm the right person for this. And I'm like, then why are you here?
Yeah.
Tony gushes about Black Athena to Cheryl. Blanche, I love you so much. This is the funniest accidental entendre that I have ever heard. Thank you. Cheryl is very interested in it, especially after she walked by their meeting. She tells Tony that she misses hanging out with her since they barely get to see each other anymore between Black Athena and the River Vixens. She asks if they can go on a date tonight, but Tony declines in favor of finishing up the next book they'll be discussing. Cheryl asks if she can take along to one of her meetings. She wouldn't say anything, just listen. Tony's not so sure about this idea because there have only been a few meetings and she doesn't want to make any of their other members uncomfortable, but maybe towards the end of the semester. Cheryl understands and longingly holds Tony's hand.
What's the entendre? Is it just gushes?
Yeah, it sure is.
Oh, it's just gushes. Okay, great. Wait, is it about Black Athena? Is it... Just needed some clarification. Okay, wonderful.
Hey, proud of you. Proud of you.
Got it, guys. Never use the word gush. Got it. I'll write that down.
No.
Never use the word gush.
Specific context of Tony gushing and Cheryl. It's fine.
Got it. Okay.
It's not a complicated joke.
I like how she says Clay monopolizes the conversation. First of all, we see that throughout the rest of the storyline, which I do appreciate. But also, I relate to Clay. I do be monopolizing conversations.
You never.
Stop.
No, I have never seen...
I know.
I've never seen a theater kid monopolize a conversation in my life.
I literally was like, I need to monopolize conversations so bad that I have 4 podcasts.
Bro, but like at the same time, like all of us, like your flavor of like theater kid autism and my flavor of ADHD dumbass, it's so complimentary because we can talk at each other.
Yeah.
about like whatever our special interest is and we'll be like, my turn to talk. Noted. Okay, also, thank you for listening. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. I'll remember what you said, but now you need to let me talk. The author that Clay has a crush on is James Arthur Baldwin. He was an American writer. He garnered acclaim for his work across several forms, including essays, novels, plays, and poems. His first novel, Go Tell It on the Mountain, was published in 1953. Decades later, Time magazine included the novel on its list of the best English language novels released from 1923 to 2005. So same list as that last one, which is cool. And his first essay collection, Notes of a Native Son, was published in 1955. Interesting that James Baldwin wrote something called Notes of a Native Son, but the novel that they're discussing is just called Native Son, and it's totally different.
Yeah, that is... 1955. The title could be inspired by, because it was published later.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Is I was like, I bet he wrote the essay collection. It was published in 1955. Native Son came out in 1940. So I bet it was a reference to the novel.
Yeah. We love a reference. We love nerds.
Speaking of, Native Son is the next novel that they're going to be discussing. It's a novel written by the American author Richard Wright. It tells the story of 20-year-old Bigger Thomas, a black youth living in utter poverty in a poor area on Chicago's south side in the 1930s. While not apologizing for Bigger's crimes, Wright portrays a systemic causation behind them. Bigger's lawyer, Boris Max, makes the case that there is no escape from this destiny for his client or any other black American, since they are the necessary product of the society that formed them and told them since birth who exactly they were supposed to be. I'm like, oh,
how the hell has this not been turned into a film?
I'm like out here like going to check the library to see if there are audiobooks of this.
Like
Native Son movie.
It has never been turned into a film. Just kidding, it has. It was in 2019.
No, I've got a couple. Yeah, I was like, yeah.
Interesting.
I've got
this sounds like an the minute I heard it, I was like, I have, you know, aforementioned ADHD, so I'm like, oh, I would need to watch a movie of this. Like, I badly do. This sounds, you know what? We don't need Clay's List. We have Clay's List.
Yeah.
We are about to be educated.
Yes. How did you feel about the conversation in this scene?
I was worried about where it was going to go, but the way that the storyline wrapped up had me feeling okay with it. Because at first I thought, and maybe it was Cheryl trying to push herself into a space that she didn't belong because it was sacred, right? You know?
Yeah.
It was a space that was created to be free from, like, white students and having to, the burden of having to educate these people. So I was a little worried, but I think that there is something here in Cheryl saying, I just want to listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I thought was really important. And the fact that Tony put up a boundary and said, actually, no, I'm not ready for that. I really like the navigation of boundaries in this relationship, in this episode. It's very good. But yeah, I was a little nervous.
Yeah. And honestly, at first I was like, maybe towards the end of the semester, that feels like such a long time, you know? Like, could you at least, like, I get that she doesn't want to, like, make everybody uncomfortable. This makes total sense to me. But then I was like, well, maybe she could, like, ask them if that's okay. But then I was like, but then that might make them uncomfortable and that might make them feel like they're, like, it would be rude to say no, you know? So I'm on Tony's side here.
I think the thing that, and I said this out loud to Sam when we were watching it, is that Tony has always been a very independent character who often gets sucked into Cheryl's world and loses herself.
Uh-huh.
So I think her saying no and saying maybe later is such an important thing for Tony establishing her independence, both as a partner and as a black woman in a school that, while it's integrated, is obviously a hotbed for racism.
Yeah, I thought that both of them were valid in this scene, and I feel like it was really mature of Cheryl to just accept that Tony said no. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I do appreciate that Cheryl asked, but I also appreciate that Tony knew what she didn't want, and that it was that. She didn't want Cheryl in her space.
That's a good point. I feel like another version of Cheryl would have just been like, hello, everyone, and just barged in and, like, put down a chair and be like, what are we reading about today?
Exactly. Like, that is one of the great things about being back in the 50s and everyone's, you know, personalities being wiped and stuff, is we get to start over with Cheryl trying to be a respectful person.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
After school, gay Kevin tells Cheryl how excited he is, having just attended a Black Athena meeting, to see Clay perform a poem. Cheryl seems surprised that gay Kevin was allowed at one of the meetings, but explains that Clay invited him.
Woof. This one hurt. I felt so bad for Cheryl in this moment.
I also felt bad for Cheryl, but at the same time, I was like, still like, it's okay, Tony, protect your peace. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, okay, maybe the timing was just weird. Like, maybe Tony was like, Cheryl, no, you can't come. And then she showed up to the next one and Kevin was there. And now Tony's like, gonna go tell Cheryl that she can come because Kevin came. But then, like, she didn't get a chance to, like, you know.
Well, here's the thing that Sam and I were talking about while watching the episode, is it's also a great commentary on Clay, once again, not really being cognizant of other people's comfort and boundaries and immediately inviting his white boyfriend.
Clay just wants to perform. Mm-hmm. He just wants an audience. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, such a good point. A good point. Yeah.
At the dark room, Cheryl tells Tony that she heard Kevin got to attend a Black Athena meeting. Tony deflects and says it's just because Clay was presenting and wanted to have his boyfriend there. Cheryl gushes about how great she thinks the club sounds, and Tony finally agrees. She lends her copy of Native Son to read. They'll be discussing it at the next meeting. Cheryl thanks her and says she doesn't take this lightly.
Which was awesome.
So there is a lot of boundary pushing here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Like, Tony is just like, I guess you can come. And Cheryl's like, I really want to come. I was like, if someone said, I guess you can come, I wouldn't want to go anymore.
No!
You
know?
It sounds like you don't want me to go.
And, like, it's hard because I understand Cheryl so desperately want to make that connection, like, with her partner. But at the same time, you have to be invited.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but again, this does resolve beautifully. So just the whole time I was like, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God.
I was also so confused because I was like, wait, isn't the dark room underneath Pops? Because, like, Betty, like, walks down to see Kevin and Clay dancing when she finally learns that Kevin is gay. You know, like, it's where Le Bon Nuit was, but then we saw this, like, establishing shot of, like, an outdoor entrance, and I was like, wait, is it over on the other side of town where the original White Worm is? But it's definitely underneath Pops, so I'm like...
No, we only think it's underneath Pops because that location was previously something that was underneath Pops.
Really?
I swear, yeah. Because, like, if they're doing establishing shots of the exteriors, then it's just our supposition because they have $2 to make the show and that's no new sets.
Rough. Riverdale, the dark room. I would like, that's crazy. Let's see. The dark room is a coffee house and beatnik hangout in Riverdale. It's a usual hangout for the Southside Serpents in 1955. Really? It does not say that it's underneath Pops.
No, it's just because we're used to that set being underneath Pops.
Yeah. Huh. Wow. Okay. Well, all right then. And Blanche made a good point, too, about the scene. She said, if the club meets every day, how in God's name are these teenagers reading a whole ass book every night on top of their homework, too?
Oh my God, right?
Yeah, that's definitely a good point.
They're a little... I would be so stressed if I were them.
You know who's doing it? Clay is the one who is assigning the books, and he's like, I've already read these books, so I don't have to read them again, but everyone else needs to read them in one night to be ready to talk about them.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
At the Black Athena meeting, Clay has a somewhat charming superiority complex about how many of these books he's already read. He says he wants to hear everybody's thoughts, though. Cheryl listens to everybody share their thoughts on the book. Kevin even makes a joke. Clay asks Cheryl if she has anything to add, and though nervous to speak on it at first, she does. She says that this was the most powerful novel she's ever read, and that the racist family in the book unfortunately reminded her of her own family. But she's happy that she's read it. Jeremy asks her if this was the first book by a Black author that she's ever read. Cheryl says yes, but she can't wait to read more. Clay says he has a syllabus of Black stories by Black authors that everybody should be reading, and he'd be happy to share it with her. She says that would be great, and Tony watches them interact happily.
This was so sweet. I thought it was great. I thought Cheryl did a great job.
She did a great job without making excuses or speaking over anyone, which was very impressive.
Right, and she only spoke because she was asked a question.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's like, she said she just wanted to show up to listen, you know? And, like, at first I was like, oh my God, Jeremy, like, be nice to Cheryl. She's, like, trying her best. But it's totally fair of Jeremy to be like, okay, you're here. And, like, you're talking about, like, how do we have a conversation about this if this is the only piece of information you have.
Exactly. She doesn't have the lived experience of being Black or, you know, any of the, like, she has grown up a privileged white woman her entire life. So, like, I completely understand why Tony was nervous because, like, this could have gone, like, it is the default of, like, a lot of white people, like, you know, obviously I'm white, so, like, I feel I can speak on this, to be defensive when confronted with a failure on their part to recognize something that should be obvious, which is you haven't read anything by a Black author before. Like, you are well into your teens and you've never read a Black author's words before. But I think the vibe check that Cheryl passed was, instead of being defensive, saying, no, but I'd like to read more.
Yeah, and we know that Cheryl can read really fast because when she read The Price of Salt or The Cost of Pepper in, like, I mean, one night.
Like, what else do these kids have to do, though? Like, it's not like they have to be.
She's like, I'm on The Vixens and on Riverdale Grandstand, even though we've never talked about it again. And
I think that's for the best.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
After the Black Athena meeting, Cheryl asks Tony how she thought it went. Tony admits she's relieved, and it went better than she expected. She was worried Cheryl and her friends would be uncomfortable around each other. Cheryl says she wasn't, but she was worried she'd say the wrong thing, but everybody settled in nicely. She says she's very grateful that she got to attend and see her passion, but Tony was right to be protective of the club because it's her space. She promises to back off and to only attend their more public events, and Tony invites her to an open night at the Dark Room soon. Cheryl says she'd like to read more of the books off the list Clay gave her, and suggests that they discuss them together. Tony happily agrees and also invites her to Fang's concert.
Great.
It was literally
great.
Perfect. It was great boundary discussion, great boundary respecting, like Cheryl realizing, hey, great. Like I wanted to have this experience, but that's not the place for me. My voice is not needed there. It's on me to learn. And maybe as my partner, you would be willing to go on this journey with me. And because she respected her boundaries, Tony says yes. And I love it.
It was great. It was great.
Yeah.
Like, no notes. The only thing that I wanted to say is that Tony says, I can dig that. And I'm like, quit it with the digging. I'm tired of the digging. It was cute this time, but that doesn't mean I like it.
You need to keep a dig count.
Dig count.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I gotta go back. Yeah. I think this is like 4, maybe 5 of how many of Tony digging things.
I was gonna say, in this episode?
No. Blanche said about this storyline, I love, love, love Cheryl this season. It's such a step away from how she acted in our timeline. This version of Cheryl seems so much more mature and respectful. I really took note of the difference between this scene and how she treated the Privy Poisons in season 3, when she was jealous of all the time Tony was spending with them. It almost feels like a callback. I love that she now treats Tony like another person with hobbies and passions instead of just her girlfriend that's only there to please her. This is literally what Shoni could have been from the start, and I wish it didn't take so long to get them here.
Exactly.
Great point. It amazing.
I've always enjoyed Shoni, but the fact that Cheryl basically acted like Tony needed to have her life revolve around her was always very ugly.
Yeah. We see Cheryl and Tony again at the in this episode, but we're gonna talk about that in the next storyline.
Sounds Gucci.
So let's go into the fun stuff. We got Archie, Reggie, Betty, Veronica, Fangs, Midge, the concert, all of it is all going together here.
Absolute nonsense.
Yep.
Reggie and Archie are eating breakfast and having a debate over who's sexier. Archie thinks Marilyn Monroe and Reggie thinks Elizabeth Taylor. Of course Archie thinks Marilyn Monroe. He's into blondes.
Yep.
They ask Uncle Frank for his nasty stink bug opinion. He name drops a bunch of other women he finds sexy, including Eartha Kitt, which I respected because she was sexy as hell.
Yeah, I know. That's the one that I was surprised by too, because Uncle Frank be racist.
Yeah, it's funny because his personality changes every episode, which like, of course,
for
of
sure.
course it does. It's Parentdale.
Oh yeah, because they got nice guy Uncle Frank this episode. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not gonna fall for this.
No, like, and also just because he finds one black woman attractive doesn't mean he's not racist.
Yeah.
Or not racist, exclamation part.
Yeah.
So, but I will say, I completely agree because Eartha Kitt, he does say Elizabeth Taylor, so he agrees with Reggie. Then he gives Archie his keys back since Featherhead said his GPA is up to a B+. Oh, to be a white man. A B+. The bar is on the floor for you. Meanwhile, Reggie has to like literally bring the Bulldogs or whatever the hell their basketball team is called to like championship or he is gonna be kicked back to the farm. Ugh! Yep. Anyway, Archie and Reggie rush to the garage where his car is waiting. Them running was so goofy. I loved it.
Archie and Reggie this episode are my favorite thing in the whole world. I smiled and I laughed the whole time. It was beautiful.
They are such goofy. They're just two goofy guys.
Archie says, "What the frig?"
Which is funny. Like, so I too am also fond of swearing. Bless.
Archie's like, I also swear. Not in front of my Uncle Frank, though.
Yeah, he's like, I can't bring myself to do it, though.
Yeah. Blanche, of course, has to comment on Uncle Frank. She says, I hate Uncle Frank so goddamn much. I hate that they're trying to make him into a nice guy this episode. I haven't forgotten his evils. He's still homophobic and racist. I also think it's really gross that according to him, Archie only deserves basic kindness and respect when he's getting good grades.
I mean, well,
like, I want Mary back. Bring back Mary to parent this boy.
Yeah, I am missing Mary.
Like, I know it's because they can't afford her, but I'm like, please, I don't want Uncle Frank. I want Mary.
I am very much missing Mary because I like the way that she parents Archie. I think it's sweet.
Yeah.
All we do is suffer. So Sam hadn't watched the show in a quick minute, so I was like catching her up on, oh yeah, Reggie lives with him, and she's like, they're the cutest effing thing I've ever seen. I'm like, yeah, because they're just some silly boys.
Are so sweet. It's so sweet.
Reggie thinks it's so cool that Archie has his own car and says he's always wanted one of his own but could never afford it. Archie says he couldn't either. He and Fred found this car at the dump and spent years fixing it up together. They finished right before he went off to war. Reggie thinks it's nice that they were so close. The two of them decide to skip school and take a joyride.
Adorable. The only note I have is that I just love them being best friends. It's so cute. I love it.
I completely agree. I also really love that Archie called Fred his best friend.
Yeah.
That was so sweet.
Oh.
Reggie and Archie are seen taking the car for a joyride near Sweetwater River, and have a great time. I'm like, I don't know, it's generic British Columbia.
Yeah, probably Sweetwater River. I was like, oh my god, why are they sitting so close together? And, you know, it's because it's a very small cabin, like cabin of the car. But still.
Two best friends in a doggy. They might kiss. I think
not 5 feet apart because they gay.
Exactly. I think this would have been the most fun shooting day ever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's clear that they were just allowed to drive and do whatever the hell they wanted. And oh, what a great day that would be.
Okay, Jay and Charles had the most fun.
100%.
This episode, it was so great.
Also, the flames on that car, chef's kiss.
Yes.
In a storyline that I truly care the least about, Pinks approaches Midge in the hallway, asking how she and the baby are doing. He says he has news. He booked a gig in Centerville. Richie Valens is headlining, and there will be producers there looking for new talent. Midge asks when and where, but Fang says she can't come because the show is in a rough part of town, and he doesn't want her or the baby to get hurt if something bad happens. He's also worried that her parents will find out, and reminds her that he needs to be a rich musician by the next time he sees them so they can get married. They kiss and part ways to go to class. This scene was full of so much lingo, it like had me dizzy. Lingo, 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 lingo.
Yeah, it's true. I was just like, huh, what?
This whole episode, lingo.
Last episode, I was like, when are they going to bring the pregnancy thing back up again? And they were like, we heard you. Here you go. There you go.
We know.
It's very cool that Fangs is opening for Richie Valens, who is a American. Oh, who was. Sorry, he died.
Sorry, he died.
In fact, it looks like he's going to die. Actually, it looks like he's gonna die in 4 years. He was an American guitarist, singer, and songwriter, a rock and roll pioneer, and a forefather of the Chicano rock movement. He was killed in a plane crash 8 months into his music career.
What?
Wow, I didn't even know that. That's crazy.
Oh my god.
I've heard of his name before, though.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't even know that he was, like, not on the scene for very long at all. That's crazy that he, like, made such an impact in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I guess when you're on the forefront of something. Wow, that's crazy. Wow. I wonder if I bet you the show plays with that.
Wow, there's some really cool stuff. Oh, damn. Okay, interesting. So the day that he died was known as the day that the music died. And I wonder if that's what Yeah. That's what American Pie is written about this, dude.
What?
Okay, on February 3rd, this is live, live research.
Everybody who knows this is like, oh, you two are morons. And I'm like, I know, but we can't know everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everyone else knows this. Everyone knows this. They're like, what, Robbie, you don't know a thing about a plane crash? Don't you know every single plane crash that has ever happened? Good point. I'm really sorry.
Robin, where is MH370 then?
I don't know.
God damn it.
On February 3rd, 1959, American rock and roll musicians Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and the big bopper J.P. Richardson were all killed in a plane crash near Clear Lake, Iowa, together with pilot Roger Peterson. The event later became known as the Day the Music Died, after singer-songwriter Don McLean referred to it as such in his 1971 song American Pie. Wow.
I didn't know that's how Buddy Holly died.
Me neither. I was out here not knowing stuff, but now I do.
Listen, here's the thing, though. We can't know everything all the time. Now we know.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
That is crazy.
Oh my god. For a second, they better not, but like they're like gonna skip forward 8 months and Fangs like knows Richie Valens and is in the plane crash. They better not.
Okay, but they would do that. They're disrespectful.
They would though.
Yeah.
Exactly. They would do that and I don't wanna see it.
Oh my god. They're like, the 50 storyline actually ends with all of them dying.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Literally. Midge says fantabulous, which I'm like, wait, there's no way fantabulous feels so 90s or like so
modern. Yeah.
Yeah. So modern that like it was crazy to hear her say that. And then I was like, oh, you don't want Midge to come to the performance? Oh, just have somebody record it on your iPhone. Oh, wait, you can't because it's the 1950s.
Oh, wait, you can't because you're stuck in the past, you freaking dork.
Sorry, dweebs.
None of you have Google. Good luck having to read books.
Yep.
Brutal. Okay. I really don't care about this storyline. Like, not because it's just there's other more exciting things going on, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Outside at lunch, Betty and Veronica are having a similar debate to Archie and Reggie's at breakfast. Paul Newman or Marlon Brando? I immediately chose Marlon Brando. He was very handsome.
I didn't really know what either of them looked like as a kid, but then when I saw the pictures, I was like, Marlon Brando is very clearly more handsome.
Exactly. Thank you. And Marlon Brando was a total bro.
I also
realize that, like, the reason why we're getting this, like, Fang storyline is because Fang is technically one of the main characters, and so he needs to have, like, a storyline, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's why they're giving it to him.
Oops.
Yeah.
I kind of forgot he was the main character because they haven't really done a lot of stuff with him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, so Marlon Brando was a political activist.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, he participated in the civil rights movement and was a total G. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that he also did other problematic things, but from what I remember about him, he was cool. I also remember someone saying he was bisexual, but I might be wrong.
One moment. Heading to his Wikipedia page and going down to personal life.
Oh my god. Queers in History, the Comprehensive Encyclopedia of Historical Gays, Lesbians, and Bisexuals.
There you go.
See, that was bisexual, recognizing bisexual when I chose him.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
And that's why Betty chose him too.
Okay, but exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, Betty says she would marry Paul Newman but smash Marlon Brando, and I'm like, yeah, probably. I have no knowledge of his personal life, just for the record, so if I said he was a G and he was not a G, please take this as my apology in advance.
Like we just said, we can't know everything.
I can't know everything!
Especially all this stuff about the 1950s, I don't know!
I've watched Back to the Future.
If I know anything about the 1950s, I'm lucky!
I've watched Back to the Future, that's my knowledge of the 50s.
Yeah. Okay, this is under personal life for Marlon Brando. Brando was known for his tumultuous personal life and his large number of partners and children. He was the father to at least 11 children, three of whom were adopted. In 1976, he told a French journalist, "Homosexuality is so much in fashion, it no longer makes news. Like a large number of men, I too have had homosexual experiences, and I am not ashamed. I have never paid much attention to what people think about me, but if there is someone who is convinced that Jack Nicholson and I are lovers, may they continue to do so. I find it amusing."
Oh my. Oh my god, I love him, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I bet Jack Nicholson hated that.
Oh, for sure.
He just, I don't.
I'm just continuing to look to see if there's anything more about this.
Go ahead. No, Jack Nicholson hated that.
See, it looks like most of his, like, public relationships were with women, though, as far as it looks like.
Oh, I'm sure. You want to keep the actual queer stuff a secret at that time.
All there is I have this, like, bottom part here that says, like, right at the end, in 2018, Quincy Jones and Jennifer Leigh claimed that Brando had a sexual relationship with comedian and Superman 3 actor Richard Pryor. Pryor's daughter, Rain Pryor, later disputed the claim. That's all it says, but...
Interesting. Huh.
Interesting. We're learning.
I love that Marlon Brando was like, well, being gay is cool now, so I have definitely done that. And I'm like,
I don't care. Yeah.
Baby, you should be glad you're dead. It's not cool again.
I'm like working in a middle school and they're like, you cannot cite Wikipedia. Wikipedia is not. And I'm like, except for my podcast here, Wikipedia is the only source.
I use
Wikipedia for everything.
Sorry, but I think it's a little bullshit that they say you can't cite Wikipedia when that is like the main hub for where you go and find the sources.
Yeah, exactly. You can't cite Wikipedia, but you can go on Wikipedia and go down to the sources and find stuff. Meh, whatever.
It's my uneducated opinion. Anyway.
I love Betty and Veronica playing Kiss, Marry, Kill. I thought that was so funny. And the only other thing I had was that, like, Archie and Reggie, like, drive by, and I'm like, is that a parking spot?
Oh, no, definitely not.
I don't think that's a parking spot. Oh, okay, you're just gonna walk in? All right.
I haven't actually, we got one sentence into the scene summary. Do you want me to continue it?
Oh, I forgot that we didn't finish the scene summary.
We got really sidetracked by Marlon Brando.
My B, go on.
My B, but also, what an honor. Betty says she'll marry Paul Newman, but smash Marlon Brando. Veronica says she's been meaning to ask Betty why she looks so good. Is she using a new cold cream? Betty says, nope, just soap and water. What? Okay. Alice has been staying out of her life, and it's like a weight has been lifted. I am so sad because, Alice, you are so fine, but you are so awful. Ronnie says good for both of them being independent young women. They're both distracted by Archie and Reggie arriving in Archie's car. Ronnie says to forget about hypotheticals because we have our own Marlon and Paul to play with here at school. Play with. Ronnie, you nasty.
Tell me why Marlon, the fact that Paul Rudd's name is Paul is insane to me. And the fact that Marlon Brando's name is Marlon, I'm like, wait, what do you mean Marlon?
No, his name is Marlon Brando.
That's his name. Yeah. Marlon, that's the name of Nemo's dad.
That's
not your name.
That's a clownfish.
That's a clownfish. Are you crazy?
Silly goofy. What is wrong with us?
That's the Marlon Brando's name. That's the name of a fictional fish.
That's the name of a clown fish. What does this have to do with Riverdale? F***ing nothing. I just want to say Blanche's note here cracked me up, and I have to read it, which says, very disappointed we didn't get to see Alice this episode. No, Alice, don't remove yourself from your daughter's life. You're entirely, you're so sexy. Ha ha ha. Exactly.
She finishes every single one with, you're so sexy. Aha. It's so good.
You're so sexy. And she's right, because it's like, she's so fine. Like, as a MILF enthusiast, she's so fine, but she's so awful.
Yeah.
Veronica approaches Reggie in the hallway. She apologizes for not making any of their dates last week and asks for another chance. Reggie pretty much says he's worried she's not into commitment. Ronnie says there's only one way to find out. Ronnie, game playing. Not good.
I love that, like, this version of Reggie is, I guess, into commitment. Like, he wants to be with her, which is really sweet.
It's really sweet. And I'm like, Ronnie, do not mess this up. He is a good boy.
Oh, she so screwed it up last episode. And I was just like, you're lucky he's giving you another chance.
Exactly.
Be good. And Veronica's like, my friend Lauren Bacall said. And I was like, oh my God. Veronica is giving Tahani from The Good Place. She's just like, let me just, like, name drop every person I've ever known.
Wait, oh my God. She's totally giving Tahani.
Yeah.
Oh, what an unfortunate revelation.
Yeah.
Well, TBH, she has always given to Hani.
It's true. That is absolutely true.
She has had main character syndrome from the beginning, but it is warranted. She is a main character. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
In the locker room, Reggie asks Archie if he can borrow his car for his date with Veronica. Archie is skeptical. Oh my God! I can't say this word! Archie is skeptical. And asks if he even has a driver's license. Reggie says, of course, he took his dad's truck to the farmer's market every weekend. He promises to be careful, and Archie happily agrees. KJ's acting in all of these scenes made my heart happy.
I want to give KJ a big ol' hug. I wish they let him do comedy all the time. He's so funny.
Like, he was laying on the cheese extra in these scenes, and it works. It's goofy, and it works.
I was like, do you shave at school every day?
Well, you are if you're...
Seems like you're like a full adult man.
Yeah, you probably do if you're a 30 plus year old man playing a 16 year old. I don't know. Yeah. That's crazy. Can you imagine an actual 16 year old standing there shaving you and be like, what? You're full of shit. There's like one hair on your face.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then they start speaking in Spanish, and they're like we learned in Spanish class. And I'm like, what out scene did I miss that makes you act like this? Like, genuinely, like, to make this make sense, I'm like, so they are in Spanish class together. They have a cute little inside joke where, like, the only thing that they actually learned is my house is your house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's the reason why they're like, hey, remember that one thing we learned? Hey, you know, I'm like, what happened to make you to make that an inside joke for you?
Probably because Archie's house is Reggie's house.
They're so cute.
Yeah.
They're so cute.
They're adorable. I can't stand... I hate to compliment men, but unfortunately, they were my favorite part of this episode because they're just two nice guys just being stupid.
So sweet.
They're just guys being stupid.
I loved it. And no Julie in this episode. It was great.
Oh my God. Yeah. The lack of toxicity. Oh, chef's kiss.
Beautiful. Mwah.
Love it. Want more of it.
Please.
Betty approaches Archie and asks how he is. Archie is excited because Uncle Frank finally gave him his car back. Betty says since he's finally free of Frank, maybe they can finally go on their date. Archie says he'd love to, and she asks if he can pick her up at 7. The only problem is that he lent his car to Reggie for his and Ronnie's date. Betty suggests the bus or walking, neither of which Archie is thrilled about, but they agree on walking because, quote unquote, it sounds romantic.
I loved this because, so I loved a lot of things about this little scene. First of all, I love seeing in everyone's lockers. We also got to see in Reggie's locker, which was fun. And I thought it was cute how Archie was, like, so excited. Because before he was like, I would love to go to the movies with you, Betty. But then he couldn't. And now he can. And he's like, I'm so excited to go, which is really sweet. But I loved how he was like, the bus? And Betty was like, or we could walk. And he's like, walk? Betty, I am lazy.
Listen,
I can't do this.
As someone who will take her car anywhere that I can.
Uh-huh.
He is such an annoying car guy. He's like, public transportation, that is not for me. And I'm like,
he's like, Betty, how am I supposed to walk? No.
What are you going to do? Put her on the handlebars of your freaking bike you're too big for?
Oh, yeah.
Just absolutely goofy, man. Yeah. Betty and Archie are on their date at Pops. It's not going well.
No.
Betty talks about how free she feels now that Alice isn't part of her life, but Archie seems very distracted. He keeps looking out the window and is not listening to her. Betty asks if he wants to call it a night, but Archie says no. He's just wondering where Veronica and Reggie went on their date, if not Pop's.
It's so funny. KJ is so good. And like, I'm like, Archie, come on, man. Don't blow this dude. But he's like, literally, she says anything that could be construed as something about a car. And he's like, what? A steering wheel? Did you see a steering wheel? When? Recently?
He's literally like a dog waiting to be thrown a treat. He's like, oh.
Was it attached to my car?
Yeah. What? Betty? And I'm like,
who has the what?
Bro, Betty knows about cars. She could be a car friend, but instead you're just an idiot.
Exactly.
This man.
Oh, it was so good. So
once cute. Again, Archie has absolutely no game, but somehow, because he's so cute, it's like endearing.
Yeah, he's so sweet that it's like, ugh, nice guys finish first sometimes, you know?
Apparently. Or actually last. I mean, they do get ditched.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Yeah.
He deserved it at that point then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
He wasn't being a nice guy at the time.
That's Archie's focus this episode was on his boyfriend slash new best friend, which like, it's kind of cute. It kind of works.
Your boyfriend should be your best friend.
And like, Betty absolutely owns his eyes later by being like, well, you didn't want to talk to me about cars. I'll just go restore one then. Bye.
Yeah. Love so her. Good.
Reggie gets home late and finds a very angry Archie waiting up for him, like an angry dad.
It's so good.
He asked where he's been. He's been worried sick. Reggie says after he dropped Veronica off, he hit the freeway for a little drive. Archie is horrified. He says his car is his favorite thing in the world and Reggie will not be using it again. He demands his keys back and storms upstairs.
It's so good.
It's 100% like... It's
so funny.
I'm mixing all of my relationships qualifiers in here, but it is 100% like two brothers arguing.
Yeah, and like, I love the part where he's like just sitting in the dark.
Oh god.
Brooding, and then he turns on the lamp beside him with his legs crossed.
Where have you been, young man?
Have you been?
He's a goofy guy.
It's so good.
Say goofy again.
I love Dad Archie. That's why it's like, wait, Betty and Archie in the real timeline, they just got engaged, right? But they had a pregnancy scare?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I'm like, anyway, I'm waiting for Dad Archie. He's gonna be great.
Oh my god, he's gonna kill it.
Yeah, it's so good. And then Reggie's like, am I grounded? And Archie's like, no.
But like, kind of.
No. A little bit though, grounded from my friendship.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of does get grounded from his friendship. He's like, me and you, we are not holding hands on the way to school. But I will still drive you there.
Liv says, I wish they let KJ do more comedy. He's so funny in the scene. KJ does great. He's just so good.
I think this season, as much as like I hate that like we are only going to catch up with the characters we've known for the last 7 years at the very end of the season, getting to do this comedy and everything just be a little bit different for the actors must be very nice.
Yeah. Everything is slightly less dramatic, and I feel like that's almost more fun sometimes.
Well, it's kitschy instead of soap opera.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's fine. Works for me.
I'll take it.
The next morning at breakfast, Uncle Frank, vomit emoji, asks Archie what he and Reggie were arguing about last night. Archie is hurt that he took his car on the highway. Uncle Frank says that growing up, he and Fred shared a car that they used to fight over. He says Reggie is far from home and has worked very hard for the things guys like Archie take for granted and give him a break. No, I'm sorry. When does Uncle Frank understand classism? Bullshit.
No, I don't believe it. I said, stop trying to be a good person. You suck.
Again, you know, Parentale personalities change from episode to episode. So I'm like, Uncle Frank teaching Archie about classism is interesting. And then I'm like, no, Archie would be teaching Uncle Frank about that because Reggie just taught him about racism and classism for the first time.
Exactly. Yeah, and Blanche makes a good point because we know how much Blanche hates Uncle Frank. She says, what game are you playing, Uncle Frank? I know you're still evil. And PSA, so when we were watching live, Blanche put this in the Discord. She said, I already said this during the live watch, but for everyone listening, do not let him fool you. It's exactly what he wants. He wants to lull you into a false sense of security.
Okay, Blanche with like the friggin' burn book from Mean Girls being, he is a skank, a bitch, do not trust him. He's
a fugly slut.
And then you just tape a picture of Uncle Frank in there. Uncle Frank!
Oh yeah, with the bad mustache.
100%. Yeah, Again, apologies to Ryan Robbins.
Yeah.
Sorry, your mustache is lovely, Ryan Robbins.
I'm sorry, Ryan Robbins, you're not a fugly slut. You're not a fugly slut. Sorry, man.
I'm sorry. It's Uncle Frank's personality that makes him a fugly slut.
Oh, wait. Isn't it fugly cow? Sorry.
No, it's fugly slut, isn't it?
Oh, it is? Okay, good.
I think it's a... whatever it is.
Wait.
Wait, you have to... Hang on. Okay.
Now I gotta look it up. Hold on.
Mean Girls Burn Book.
Burn Book.
Fugly.
Fugly.
This, do not trust him. He is a fugly slut. See?
Oh, good. Okay, I was right.
I want you to know that when you Google that, all of the top images are, this man is the nastiest skank bitch I've ever met. Do not trust him. He is a fugly slut. And it's a picture of Donald Trump.
It's true.
Like, okay.
Good point.
You know what? Put Ron DeSantis in there, too.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell. I had a dream last night. This is not related. I had a dream last night that my mom booked me some kind of room at a hotel for my birthday, and Mitch McConnell was going to use it afterwards. So I left little post-it notes all over the room telling him what a little f***er he was.
Yeah, and tiny little turds, I hope.
Oh, should have done that. Oh, didn't think of
it. Yeah, turds under the bed. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, smart.
I've never done that, but I feel like it'd be a good plan.
It is a good plan.
Yeah. Okay, so for next time.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Never dream me. Anyway, okay, back to the podcast. I like that your note for Frank is just, Frank, stop being a good person. You suck.
It's true. He's wrong. He does.
Veronica asks Betty how her date with Archie went. She says it wasn't great because he was distracted all the time. How did it go with Reggie? Fine, and explains that usually boys will pull over so they can kiss, but Reggie just wanted to drive around all night. He also seemed distracted and said that he kept looking at his watch. Betty suggests they switch dates, but Veronica says maybe they should double date. There's a concert happening in Centerville tonight, and they should give the boys a chance to redeem themselves by taking them.
I love Betty being like, maybe we should switch. I don't know. Want to try it out with Reggie again.
I kind of love this.
And now she gets to hang out with him.
Exactly.
At the end of the episode, they're like hanging out. He like asked her to help, which is sweet.
Exactly. I kind of love this.
So, you know how we've been talking about how they like choose a slang and then they use it like 3 or 4 times in an episode and then never again?
100%.
So this episode's slang was hep.
Oh yeah, it definitely was hep.
So we hear hepcat, we hear hepist, hep. It basically means like hip and cool and like in the know. Basically.
Yeah, it used to be, like, if you were a hep cat, you were cool.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, they used that 3 times this episode.
This episode and was the episode of lingo. Yeah. There was so much goddamn lingo in this episode.
Oh, yeah, when Fangs was like, your parents won't like us getting circled.
And I literally looked at my wife and I was like, what the f*** does that mean?
I think it means married.
It probably does, but yeah. I need them to at least use, you know what, they don't have to do anything. They just because I don't understand something doesn't mean someone else doesn't. You know? Shut up, Brittany!
When I was watching the episode live, I was like, oh, I see. Yeah, duh. The only way that we get to see Fangs perform is to get the main characters there at the concert. That makes sense. Because otherwise, they're not going to show us Fangs performing. But they didn't do it anyway!
Robin, when I say this show is being made for a dollar,
yeah,
they can't afford song licensing. They can't afford crowds. They cannot afford a new set.
Uh-uh.
They have, you notice that a lot of the scenes have been exteriors because that's freaking cheaper than anything else.
Yeah, that's fair.
They have no money. Oh man. They're probably saving it for a CGI budget for when they all get thrown into the future.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I know like this is happening and I'm like, well, last season Cheryl like sent magic from her fingers and levitated into the air to try and fight a comet. So
I can't wait to see what they do this season.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know, jalopy joyrides. And I'm like, okay, you know what? That's fine.
All right, sure. Fun.
I'll take it. After school, Archie apologizes to Reggie for freaking out. Reggie apologizes too. They soon find Betty and Veronica waiting by Archie's car, and they ask if they'll take them on a double date to dinner and to Fangs' show. So Betty, Archie, and Reggie and Veronica go on their double date. They are getting dinner at Pop's before the show, and Reggie and Archie are the most annoying men in the entire world because they spend the entire time looking at car magazines with each other. Here's, okay, the girls literally talk about how, hey, by the way, we also like cars and we know a lot about cars. And they're like, excuse me, you're intruding on our date that we're having with each other.
They are blowing it with the girls, but they are doing really well with each other.
Exactly. And they're like, that's kind
of... And then they hold hands.
That's the goal. They do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so Veronica says that Steve McQueen used to drive her around and he had a cool car. I'm sorry, if I were a man, I would be like, tell me everything about that right now.
Tell me everything about that, yeah.
And Betty adds that she's fixed up a few cars before and like knows how to rebuild engines.
And is really good at it.
And is cool. And they're like, hey guys, like we're trying to participate. And the boys are too caught up in their magazines.
Oh yeah, Betty's like, you know what? That's fine. I'll just talk to Veronica. I have fantasized myself making out with all 3 of you, so whatever.
And really, any combination of that date was going to work for Betty. We love a bisexual queen.
Yeah. Yeah. And Archie. Archie's like, that's fine.
I too bisexual.
Yeah.
The girls have finally had enough and suggest leaving for the show or they'll be late. But Reggie and Archie both reach for the keys at the same time. They argue a bit and Archie decides he will be driving.
But yeah, they're like fully holding hands.
They're like, oh my God, we touched fingers. Intimacy.
And Archie, Reggie, canon, endgame. I love it. Was it Centerville? I'm pretty sure it is. So like in season 2 or 3, I think it was Jughead. Penny Peabody, like, got Jughead to go and, like, make a, some sort of, like, drug run or, like, went and put something in Centerville. This happened in, like, Tales of the Dark Side, I think.
Yeah.
It was, like, 307, maybe? 207, I think. Anyway, and so she was the whole thing where she was like, you should go fast because you're not supposed to be in Centerville past midnight or something like that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
This is just a memory that I have. But anyway, like, they don't bring it up this episode or anything, but I thought it was interesting that, like, the show was in Centerville and Fangs had said, like, it's not in a very good part of town or, like, it's not safe to be there at night or something like that. So, I don't know. I just wanted to bring up that was sort of maybe a callback.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you for listening to me ramble about something that I don't totally remember.
I don't remember it at all, so it's educational for me.
Wonderful.
Archie's car breaks down on the way to the show. They're out of gas because Reggie forgot to fill it up. The girls are annoyed, and Veronica says that since she's in stilettos and Pops is 5 miles back, the boys should start walking. They leave the way they came.
Humiliating. I liked that Betty was like...
The minute Ronnie was like, we're gonna get warm, I was like, Snuggles!
I did love that Betty was like, Archie, like, do you need help? Because I am Betty and I know things about cars. And he's like, no, somebody just goofed it. And forgot to fill it up with gas. Someone goofed it. I'm not going to say who.
That's why the word goof is in my brain.
I'm not going to say who, but it was someone and they goofed.
Naming no Reggies.
They absolutely goofed. And it's like sort of smoking. And I was like, wait, is that how it works when you run out of gas? But I guess that's like the phrase, what the phrase running on fumes came from.
Oh, that would make sense.
Does it smoke when you run out of gas?
Not from my experience.
Oh, I've never done that, so I don't actually know.
But then again, I don't actually know what I'm talking about, so...
Yeah, it's also an old-timey car, so I don't know.
I'd just be talking.
Yeah, same. And so Archie and Reggie walk away, and I'm like, I hope they talk and kiss on the way there.
They do not.
They do not kiss, but they sort of hug.
They do the like, they're so stupid.
Obviously, it worked out for Betty and Veronica to, like, stay sitting in the car, but that is never me. I would always rather go because I always want to know, like, how much longer, you know? Like, I'm like, how far... Like, I might be sitting here for who knows how long. And I don't have a phone.
Fair enough. To, like,
watch TikToks while I'm waiting. That's why I'm always watching people's locations all the time.
Why?
When I'm waiting for somebody to do something, I check their location. And then I know, like, how far away they are from getting home or getting there.
And you know how much time you have to watch TikTok.
Correct.
Fair enough.
Anyway, I'm always watching locations. Not from random people or anything, just the people whose locations I have, which include my parents and my sister and you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, also me, we do stalk each other.
I want you to know that before I, like, send you guys, like, a random FaceTime, I always check to make sure you're at home.
Oh, I do the same thing.
Every time.
That's just polite.
Yeah.
What if they're busy?
I'm like, if I'm gonna send a random FaceTime, which already, not that nice, I gotta check to make sure they're at home.
We love a queen.
At least there's something.
Honestly, queen of manners.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
On their way back to Pops, the boys try to hitchhike, but no one is stopping. Archie says Reggie should ask Clifford Blossom to get him a car because he wants to keep him happy anyway. Reggie says he does not want to get in any deeper with him, and then it's bad enough that he's paying someone to work on his parents' farm in his place. He asks if Archie only sees him as someone looking for handouts, and if he doesn't think he deserves to be held in the same regard as him. Archie says to stop being so sensitive. They start full-on wrestling in the middle of the road and only stop when a car drives by, to which they try to get a ride. The car doesn't stop, so they go back to fighting.
Incredible.
They are absolute fools.
I love this because, first of all, it's very funny and it's cute of them, but it also sort of hides a very important conversation that they're having, which is that, like, Reggie sort of, you know, it's not Reggie's job to teach Archie, but he has done in the past few episodes. He's been like, actually, Archie, you're naive and this is why, right? And so Archie, I know, like, he's, like, kind of pissed off right now, but, you know, Reggie's just like, hey, here's how I feel, and Archie's like, you're being sensitive, and it's like, Archie, this is you doing the thing again.
Like, it's not that he's being sensitive, it's that he is in a very different place in the world than you are, dummy.
Right. But it helps them because then they start to, like, understand each other a little bit better.
Oh, for sure. It's very sweet. It's just also, oh God, Archie's simple.
people.
But it's consistent, too.
Oh, of course it is. He's naive.
You know, Archie can't learn all in one go, right? It's an uphill climb for him.
And to him, there would also be no shame in asking for something because he's a white guy asking another white guy for, you know, something that he believes he maybe is owed. And it's like, oh, no. That's not how that works.
I love this storyline so much. And I think, you know, we really needed it because, like, the other two storylines were very good, but they were a lot heavier than this. And mm-hmm. so, like, we really needed this storyline to sort of offset the heavy stuff. And I think it was done really, really well. I thought this scene is so cute. And then I loved the part where Reggie's like fighting with Archie and he goes, submit.
Like, what, you guys are at the end. Fools.
It was so cute. I loved it.
I just now know that they play wrestle at home. Betty and Veronica are waiting in the car when Cheryl, Tony, and Midge pull up. They explain what happened and say they were on their way to see Fangs' show. Tony, who is drinking out of a flask like an icon, and yep. Midge offer them a ride. Betty is concerned about the boys, but Veronica has already forgotten about them and gets into Cheryl's car. Ronnie, you were right for that.
They just want to see the show. Yeah, 100%. I'm like, I'm not going to sit here forever.
No.
Me and Meta, when we were watching, we were just like, wait, what if it's the milkman? It wasn't. Thank God. Thank God it wasn't the milkman.
No, it was three women driving with the top down in the cold.
At night. Yeah.
At night.
Okay. I love that Midge is like just gonna go to the show anyway, even though Fangs was like, don't come. She was like, no, I'm gonna go. But she's smart because I think Tony said to Cheryl that it was Midge who brought up going to the show. So I think it's smart of Midge to be like, I want to still go, but I'm not gonna go by myself.
Yeah, she's a genius.
She's like, I'm gonna bring some people with me. Smart. And I like they're having little girls night and it was great. Love it.
I have no notes.
No notes.
Pop helps Archie fill up a gas can to take back to his car and asks what he and Reggie were fighting about. They're both petty about it, and Pop says, okay, you need to chill. If this is over a car, he does actually have a jalopy in his garage that he'd love for Reggie to take off his hands. They'd probably even let him keep it in the shop class at school. They both thank him, and Reggie hugs him, which is so cute.
It was so cute. First of all, Pop, I love you. You're the best. Second of all, Reggie hugging Pop was so sweet.
Like, Archie shakes his hand, and Reggie's like, no. Hug
for you. Oh, so sweet. I loved it.
Because, like, he doesn't frame it as an act of charity. And I think that's, that just makes all the difference in the world.
Exactly. He's like, you're helping me. I'm not helping you. Yeah, it was great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The boys walk back to Archie's car. Reggie says he wants to come clean and tells Archie that the night he said he went on a joyride down the highway, he actually went to visit his parents in Duck Creek. And may I just say,
I knew it.
Like,
I knew it too.
I was like, there's no way that Reggie, who is so respectful and so scared of overstepping, would just suddenly do something like that. There was a reason.
Yeah. I was like, I bet he went to see his parents.
Yep.
Yeah.
Archie says he could have just told him. And Reggie says he can't just tell people that he misses his mom and dad. Because then he'll seem...
Yes, of course you can!
No, he can't, because then he'll seem ungrateful.
No, I know. I just mean, like, of course you can, like, in right now standards, like, dude, please just have an emotion. It's okay.
It's great. It's really a great display of, one, how white supremacy keeps everybody down. And two, how toxic masculinity means that he cannot safely express how he feels without being viewed as being ungrateful.
Well, I also love that, like, yeah, that's a good point that, like, if they're like, if I miss my mom and dad, okay, go back to them then.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. But I also love that Archie's just like, Reggie's like, I can't say that because I can't be, like, viewed as unmasculine. And Archie's like, well, if you miss your parents, well, guess what? I also miss my dad. And now we have something to, like, relate to. And now when you, like, feel like you need to voice those things, I'm someone that you can come to.
They're
sweet.
It's a safe space. They're creating a safe space for each other. And it's just, it's so wholesome.
That's so cute.
All these bitches is my sons.
Oh, yeah. I cry.
All right. Archie says that he's felt homesick ever since Fred died. He says Fred was his best friend and he's never had a best friend since then. Reggie says, well, what about Betty or Jughead? And I'm like, yeah, what about Betty or Jughead?
Yeah.
Because we are back in the 50s again. And the entire point of Riverdale and of the Archie comics is for Jughead and Archie to be best friends, and they are still not best friends.
Exactly.
Archie says that he can't talk about cars with Betty and Jughead, but hey, how are things with Reggie's parents? He says that they're happy that he's somewhere nice with good people. Archie is good people. Archie says Reggie is too.
Not Frank, though.
Not you, Frank. Mary? Yes, you. Archie says that Reggie is too, and adds that Fred would have loved him. They finally get back into the car to find that Betty and Veronica freaking bounced.
I for a second, I thought Archie Redger would be like, they're dead! They've been taken and murdered!
Oh, there is a horrible little rat man coming in here.
Hi, baby!
Oh, little guy.
Hey, you actually don't look nearly as awful as I thought you would.
Oh,
you
haven't seen his back.
Hi, baby. How you doing?
Oh, no. Send me a picture.
Hang on. I'm going.
Come here.
I really expected them to be like, they're dead. They're dead and gone. They've died. We've murdered them.
Oh, Betty and Veronica?
Yeah, like Archie and Reggie be like, they've been stolen and they're taken.
See, whereas if I were them, I would know immediately.
Yeah, that they like just left.
They did in fact ditch us. Sorry, burping.
Yeah, burping. I like how they're now best friends.
They are the best friends that have ever been. And I am super excited about this.
And Reggie doesn't know Jughead's name and thinks his name is Soup Can.
Are they best friends? Are they brothers? Are they lovers? Who cares?
All. No, not all. Sorry. Oh, no. Never mind. I take it back.
Robin, no.
Sorry.
Oh, bless.
Also, Blanche said, why does Archie imply that he can't talk to Betty or Jughead about cars? Betty was fully just talking about how she works on cars, and Jughead's mom is literally a mechanic, so you know he has some idea of how they work.
Yeah, it is.
That's a good point.
It's not like a justifiable reason. I was like, this is pretty flimsy, but that's fine because I like that these boys are bonding.
Also, there's more than one thing you can talk about your best friend, like, talk to your best friend about, you know?
No. What?
Like, you can have one friend to talk about cars, and then you can talk about something else with other people.
No, that doesn't sound right.
I don't know. Anyway, it was so cute.
You can't have different friend groups. That's silly.
Beef soup? Soup can? Like, soup can, I get. Beef? Where did beef come from? I don't know.
I think beef is hysterical.
So funny.
Listen, they're comedy geniuses, and they don't even know it.
Beef soup.
Beef soup.
It was beef soup.
I love these boys. The next day at school, Fangs arrives and is greeted by everyone asking for his autograph. His cover of Tutti Frutti from 702 plays in the background. He spots Midge and meets her in the blue and gold.
Yeah, I was so mad. I was like, we didn't even get to see it.
No, they don't. This show has no money.
And like, the audio's from the sock hop too. Like, that's not even new. That's not even like, did he, I assume he just like played the same song.
Probably.
But I was like, okay. I was disappointed. I kind of wanted to see a little song.
They don't have the money for it, Robin.
I wanted to see a little song.
I know, me too. We have not had a lot of musical performances.
No.
And like, do I miss it? Yes. Am I also grateful that I never have to listen to someone butcher Lady Gaga again? Also, yes.
Also, yes.
I contain multitudes.
No Lady Gaga in the 50s.
They missed out.
Which is too bad.
Yeah. Fangs tells Midge that he can't believe she came to his show. Midge says she wasn't gonna miss it. He says she must be his lucky charm because the music producer from Phantom Rock Records gave him his card. Midge is thrilled for him and they kiss.
I thought it was so funny that she was like, I'm not going to miss the biggest show of your career. And I was like,
I hope that's not the biggest show.
I hope this thing where he's opening in Centerville isn't the biggest show of his career. I certainly hope there are some more big shows.
I'm going to go ahead and agree with you on that one.
Yeah. Maybe she means like biggest, like most important because of the like record people.
I mean, it's definitely the turning point in his career.
And then, like, Phantom Rock Records, the guy who gave him his card is named Rob Bean.
What a name!
I'm like, where did this name come from? Okay.
What a name!
I really don't mind Midge and Fangs. I don't mind it at all. I think it's nice that Fangs has somebody that, you know, if they're gonna put Tony back with Cheryl, that Fangs has somebody. I think that's wonderful. But I cannot help but thinking, where is Moose? Because, like, Moose and Midge are such a staple of the Archie comics. I'm just waiting for him to show up. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop where her parents finally love Fangs and are okay with them getting married, and then Moose shows up. Like, I want to see it.
That would be kind of a slay.
Yeah. Blanche said, I'm a little annoyed that they didn't name drop the record label from Katie Keene. Phantom Rock Records literally means nothing. I was just thinking it could have been a cute little nod to those of us who watched Katie Keene. I don't even know what the record label from Katie Keene is, but yeah, I kind of wish that they had done that too. I think that would have been cute.
I figured Phantom Rock was a reference to some kind of label from the 50s.
Probably. I googled Phantom Rock Records and I didn't get anything, but I mean, I guess, like, that's not the name of what it would be.
Yeah, it's probably a play on words.
So, I wouldn't know. Yeah, it probably is. Like, yes. Ghost.
Exactly.
Spirit, maybe? I don't know. Anyway.
Who's to say? Reggie is working on his new car in the shop classroom. Archie walks in and says that it's in worse shape than his was when they got it.
Thanks.
Reggie says he's naming it Bella. He always dreamed of having a car named Bella.
I, dude, when I tell you, I cried.
Bro, I was literally like, oh, Bella! Like, I understood that reference.
I cried. I literally, like, started tearing up. I don't know why, but...
Oh, because you're insane.
That's just so, I don't know. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, sure, yeah.
It's that one, yep. Archie asks if he could use a hand, but Reggie says he's good. That's why he asked Betty. Archie is shook as Betty walks in and says hi. She says they missed a good show last night and that everyone thinks Fangs is the next big thing. Archie is very uncomfortable about how much she and Reggie are already bonding. This is going to be a problem.
Yeah, I thought it was funny that, like, when he walked in and we, like, saw that sort of, like, push in on Reggie, like, ringing on the car, I was like, oh, Archie's having a moment. He's like, wait, am I into Reggie? And I'm like, I've been saying it.
I literally was like, oh my god, is he about to have a bisexual panic attack? And then it was, no, he's about to be jealous. And I'm like, well, that's fine,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So Betty's helping, and KJ is so funny because he's literally, like, she walks in and he goes, what? As if they're, like, talking to him, and they're like, nothing, what? And he's like, huh? Oh, I don't... What?
It's not your business, babe.
I don't... Okay. Huh? I love awkward comedy. Like, this is my bread and butter. I love it. So good.
Which is... I mean, on this show, they actually play it so well.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
So lastly, before we get into the last storyline, Blanche said, I know Reggie is saying he's always dreamed about having a car named Bella, was obviously a nod to his car in our timeline, but I was also reminded of the scene in 622 where he says he'd always wanted a dog named Vader. Vader is his dog in the comics, and he's a dachshund, and she just wanted to point that out because she also has a dachshund, and she is, like, just wants to see Vader in the actual show so bad.
Ooh, that would be cute.
I didn't even know that Vader was Reggie's dog in the comics, so I love that.
Like, that clearly named after Darth Vader?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dog Vader.
Dog Vader! You're a genius.
Yeah. before we go into the final storyline, I want to talk to you guys real quick about Patreon. It's a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Our Patreon is patreon.com/theafficionados. If you want to join it, that would be nice. Oh, sorry, my dog is trying to move around underneath my little table thing.
Do it for him.
Do it for him, so I can feed him. The $1 level is daily. The $1 level is early access to all of the podcasts. The $2 level is our Discord server. The $5 level is 10% off at 3 different small businesses that are all in the description. $10 is our Patreon-only podcast. There is now, like, a thing where you can make it so that people can join the Patreon on a free tier, but I'm not sure what to offer. So if anybody has any ideas of, like, what to offer other than, like, early access... Because I am already offering that at the $1 tier. So anyway, I'm trying to figure out what to put there. But if you can't help us out on Patreon, just check out our small businesses or recommend us to a friend because that's free. That would be great.
Sounds Gucci to me.
Thanks. Jugatha.
Jugatha. We pick up exactly where we left off last week. Tom is at Pop's having just asked Jughead for help solving Brad's death. Tom asks if Brad had any next of kin. Jughead says he may have had a wife, but he was extremely private about that and only mentioned it in passing. He's going to check the forms he filled out at Pep Comics and get back to Tom with what he finds.
I don't even remember him mentioning that.
I also don't.
That must have happened off screen.
Or we're just dumb.
Yeah. So Keller doesn't even know that it's not a suicide.
Yeah, he's just kind of
like,
he's in denial about it not being a suicide, but also he wants to investigate it as if it's not a suicide.
Like, it's confusing because he's just like, the word solve implies that it hasn't already been solved.
I guess maybe he just wants...
And so I thought...
Know the reason?
Like, I don't know. Because, like, I thought that him being like... Jughead, it's a suicide. Jughead was like, okay. And then he showed up last episode and was like, help me solve it. And I was like, oh, Keller knew, either knows now or always knew that it wasn't actually a suicide. And it turns out that he just used the word solve for no reason. And he's just like, I just need more information about him. And if I was Jughead, I'd be like, isn't that your job?
Isn't that literally what they pay you to do? Why are you asking a teenager?
That's what you're supposed to do. That's not my thing. You do that.
Hi. ACAB includes Keller.
Yeah, it's true.
ACAB especially Keller. Jughead informs a pretty casual and unsympathetic feels tone about Brad's death. Jughead asks if he knew anything about Brad having a wife. He says no, but that he always sent half his salary to a small town in South Carolina. He says Bernie will get the P.O. box for him, and Blanche says that Bernie is an icon.
Bernie, Return of the King. That was the funniest thing ever, that me and Blanche decided that Bernie is our new favorite character, and now every time Bernie's mentioned, she's just like, an icon.
Oh my god.
Incredible.
I like this bit that you guys are doing. It's extremely funny.
No one's better. Literally the next episode, she said Bernie in parentheses, Return of the King, and now every time Bernie is brought up while I'm watching live, I go, ugh, Return of the King.
You guys are stupid.
So funny. Fieldstone, so freaking rude. I'm like, my secret thing is that Fieldstone had him murdered to not have to pay him. Because Fieldstone clearly does not give a crap about Brad at all. He's like, oh, that sucks.
I was like, having him murdered would imply that he actually had to care in the first place, which I don't think Fieldstone does.
You're right. You're right.
Fieldstone, like any capitalist, thinks that all creatives are expendable.
You know who doesn't? Bernie, Return of the King.
Exactly.
So true.
Jughead fills Tabitha in on how Brad was sending half his paychecks to a P.O. box in South Carolina. She says that that's not something a man who kills himself would do. Jughead says he's half tempted to sneak into his apartment and find out who the P.O. box belongs to. They're suspecting his wife. He's also looking for evidence that Brad didn't kill himself. Tabitha asks if he wants some company.
So cute. I love this for them.
I love this detective duo above all other. I know that Bughead was a detective duo, so but I love these two more.
Me too. And also sneak into his apartment and also steal his money that he doesn't put in the bank.
Oh my god, yeah, I bet there's so much money there.
He literally, like, episodes ago was like, he was like, I don't trust banks. And I'm like, there's so much money in that apartment.
Do you think Keller found it already?
I don't know. I don't know. They're not gonna bring it up, so it doesn't matter. But I feel like there'd just be so much money in there.
We'll bring it up.
Yeah.
Jughead and Tabitha search through Brad's apartment. Tabitha says that she found something and shows him a photo from 1948 of a woman named June Simpson. She also found a bunch of love letters written to her and Brad from each other. They assume that June is his wife and find her address and phone number on one of the letters. Tabitha says that they have to call her and let her know what's happened to Brad.
I actually think that they find that they figure out what her name is and then Jughead finds it in, like, maybe his little, like, black book or something, I'm pretty sure. But I thought it was really smart to call her June because it totally worked in the trailer. Like, Jughead's like, oh, this must have been taken in June of 1948. And, like, we see it in the trailer, you assume that exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a really smart thing to do.
Yes, it's very clever. It's some good wordplay.
It's a mystery.
What? I've never heard of one of those. Jughead calls June and lets her know that Brad has died. He says he used to work with him and is friends with him. June asks how he died, and Jug says that they're not sure. June says she'll get there ASAP, and he agrees to meet her at the apartment. Oh, it's so heartbreaking.
I'm glad that he used Brad's name. Like, I really expected him to be like, your husband is dead, assuming that that's who it was. And she goes, my husband, I'm not married, you know?
Oh my god, yeah.
So, like, I'm glad that he said, so here's the information that we have. Or she's just like, my husband! Jeremy? Or, like, you know? And he's like, oh, sorry, no.
Like, who the f*** is Jeremy?
And he says that he lives in Seaside. So this is what Blanche said. They say in this scene that Brad lives in Seaside. I know they have no budget, but how is Tom investigating this? I was under the impression that Seaside was, like, pretty far from Riverdale. And I'm like, yeah, somehow Keller has jurisdiction in Seaside?
I mean, I guess if the...
I don't know.
It's back then. The forces aren't as big. It's possible.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the same jurisdiction stuff, I would guess. But again,
yeah.
I am not speaking from any sort of knowledge. I am speaking from my ass, as always.
Yeah, like police forces in 1955 America.
That's not something I have a lot of.
Yeah. Can't say I can pull that off the top of my head.
I don't have a lot of experience with that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Tabitha and Jughead are still looking over Brad and June's letters. Tabitha says their words are beautiful, and they describe how their love endured despite everything they went through together. And I'm like, did y'all get permission to read those?
Yeah, right, right, true.
But Jughead and Tabitha are made for each other because neither know what privacy or boundaries are.
Yeah, they're like, there could be a clue in here. I don't know.
No, I should read it.
I'm just nosy.
They got married in New York, but moved to June's hometown in South Carolina to start a family. But being a biracial couple was not easy for them. Their lives were threatened and multiple racist crimes were committed. When they went to the police threatened to arrest them and not the racist thugs. Again, nothing has changed. Tabitha adds, when she was on tour with Mrs. Till, she saw similar things all the time. They figure out that Brad left South Carolina because they were terrified for the safety of June's family. The plan was to try and save up enough money to get her family to safety and then move to Paris together. Because of all this, neither of them are convinced that Brad killed himself. Cops only exist to uphold white supremacy. Thank you. I have spoken.
This is so much more interesting than Brad has ever been.
Like, why did they have to make him... They make him interesting after the fact, and I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
They do this to female characters all the time when they fridge him, so actually, I'm fine. Actually, fine.
Actually, it's fine, yeah. Like, they bring in June, and I have a note about this when they talk to June in a couple scenes, but she's 30 billion times more interesting than Brad ever was.
She's wonderful. I love her. She's so soft and gentle, but mm-hmm. also just so full of, like, passion and
yeah,
and she's so intelligent and also, like, I don't know, she's so complex. I love her.
Yeah. I'm sad that she's going to be, like, in this one episode and then leave. You know? That sucks.
Yeah, because I feel like...
I would love to keep
their relationship obviously is meant to be a mirror for Jug and Tabitha.
Yes.
But it's also, like, it's so sad because it's sort of Jug and Tabitha realizing what an uphill battle they're going to face if they decide to do this. And I'm like, do it anyway.
Yep.
It's not worth it to live in fear. I know it's scary, but as someone who just did it anyway, just do it anyway! Be gay. Be in an interracial relationship. I know these things are hard.
Yeah.
But they are worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Tom is skeptical of Jughead's theory that Brad didn't kill himself. Jughead argues that disguising a murder as a suicide is a trope in fiction. Tom asks how well he really knew Brad, and Jughead replies well enough to know that he wouldn't do this. Tom asks if he knew Brad was a communist. Comrade? A draft dodger and a war protester, a drug addict, and then he also spent months in a mental hospital. And I'm like, Brad sounds awesome!
Tom's like, I hate that. And Jughead's like, no,
really sounds cool to me. Tom hands Jughead the file. He is in denial, and Tom says that it's a miracle someone with this many secrets didn't take his own life sooner. Fuck you, Tom!
Not great, Keller! Not great, man!
Genuinely? Fuck this dude. I know I'm not supposed to swear, but I said it because I meant it.
Like, to be fair, like, Jughead being like, everyone knows that's a stereotype in fiction, Keller, and Keller's like, yeah, Jughead, this is real life.
I mean, that was genuinely funny.
Like, that...
When he was like, this is a trope in fiction, and I'm like, that has nothing to do with the situation you're in.
Yeah, so that part was funny, but yeah, like, Tom, not a great moment for you at the end, dude. Real bad.
Like, it's a miracle that this guy didn't die sooner, and I'm like, it's a miracle I haven't killed you.
to be fair, is that, like, you know, they keep being like, well, this, and this doesn't seem like somebody who would kill themselves, but...
You never know. You're never gonna know.
People, you never know, you know? You never know. People could make plans and... You know, you just don't know, right? So I did want to say that.
The entire point is that you will never actually... Sometimes you just don't see it coming.
Yeah.
Jughead and Tabitha meet with June. She shows them the last letter she got from Brad, and he must have mailed it right before he died. She shares it with them and says he wrote about wanting to have his novel published, just like Jughead said. He says if a publisher takes it, they'd finally have enough money to carry out their goal. He also said that he felt so much optimism about their future together, and June says it did not sound like he was planning suicide. Jughead and Tabitha agree. Jughead asks what was up with him being a communist and a war protester, and why he'd been in an asylum. June explains that Brad actually served during World War II and got addicted to opium because of the treatment of a war injury. They never tell us what the war injury is. Like, they can't, they just say war injury. It's very funny.
Yeah.
She says he checked himself into St. Vincent's voluntarily. During the Great Depression, he also did attend a few communist meetings because he was young and curious. She also calls him an optimist, even when he worked the graveyard shift at the Maple Factory. Jug says he must have been murdered. June gives him her blessing to look into his death.
June, you a real one.
I find this fascinating because, one, being anti-war after going through the war is actually extremely logical to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially given how every country treats their veterans.
Yeah.
So of course he's going to be anti-war. Of course he's going to be a draft dodger. He already did it and it was awful.
Yeah.
And then they gave him, I mean, it's the same thing now with fentanyl. They gave him painkillers that were highly addictive and he knew enough to know that it was bad and checked it. I respect this man.
Yeah.
And
I know he got so much better after he died.
And I respect Marxist curiosity as well, because fascist communism, bad. Marxist communism, making points.
I'm like, Melvin the Milkman, you will not see heaven. First of all, you're a murderer. Second of all, you took away Brad.
Bro, is his name really Melvin?
Well, his...
Or is this just a you thing?
His name tag says Melvin. No, his name tag says Melvin.
Oh, my God. These writers love an alliteration more than they love anything else in this world.
Yeah. So, obviously, Brad's apartment is Jughead and Tabitha's apartment.
Oh my god, right?
In the previous... Yeah. I love seeing them back in there together.
Me too. I'm like, this is your home.
Even though it's, like, not necessarily their apartment. But I'm also like, how are you guys allowed to just, like, hang out in there, though? He died here.
What Keller doesn't know won't hurt him.
Yeah. They also said that he used to work at the Maple Factory, which is interesting.
That was my same thing as well.
Because Maple and because Blossom.
The Blossoms own that, right?
Yeah. So there's something there.
Interesting. Yes, there is.
Mm-hmm.
Jughead and Tabitha say goodbye to June, asking what's next for her. June says she's going to bury Brad where they first met and then work on getting his novel published. She tells Jughead that Brad always loved comic books and would be happy to see him to continue adapting his stories. He says he'd be honored and would like to do a tribute issue, with all of the proceeds going to June. She also asks if he and Tabitha are a couple. They both smile but say they're just good friends. Pals. I'm like, you're in love. It's fine. June isn't buying it, but says to take care of each other and leaves.
Blanche said they're so sweet together. I just want to point out the difference in Jughead's reactions to people thinking he's with Tabitha versus Ethel. I'll say it, they're endgame. She's right. I mean, like, Jughead, people ask about Ethel and Jughead's like, huh? What? No. And when he's with Tabitha, he's like, what? I don't know. No, we're just friends. I don't know.
What? No. What? Do you think she likes me?
I feel like it's a pattern, you know, like they're doing it on purpose. I'm just like, why do people keep asking Jughead if he's dating people? But I think that the reason is that they can show the difference between how he actually feels about people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Aww.
And also to show that she is the perfect partner for him and he is the perfect partner for her.
And good guy Jughead for, like, giving all the proceeds to June for the comic book and everything. Like, it's good stuff.
It just goes to show that greed and racism and bigotry are all choices. And Jughead chooses at every turn not to make that choice.
Oh, that's my friend Jughead.
And Tabitha, being her little detective self and being so inspired by this, Tabitha is the perfect person for this show. Like, the fact that she is she's the perfect person, period. Boom, done.
Yeah.
She's perfect. I love her. She's, like, one of my favorite characters on the show, and she's never in it. And
I know, and now she's freaking leaving again.
Bro, I'm so mad.
So pissed. Worst thing about this episode.
I was like, what do you mean she's leaving? I just got Detective Tabitha back.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
So mad.
Jughead and Tabitha are at Pops reflecting on the day. Tabitha thinks she should go back on the road with her parents and Mrs. Till. She says that she was planning on taking some time off to rest, but meeting June and hearing her story reminded her of where she should be. Jughead supports her and says there's nothing more meaningful than fighting for people to live their free lives and love whoever they want. Tabitha quips that hopefully he'll actually send her homework this time, and he laughs and says yes, and maybe some letters too.
That's so romantic!
They're in love. They're in love!
Oh my god! The freaking moment where, like, because, like, they just did this whole thing about letters and, like, this married couple who were, like, deeply in love.
Bro, when I tell you...
Like, and then he's just like, maybe I'll send you some letters. Oh my god!
When...
Romance from this ace man!
Exactly! And he's got... He's got it. Like, he just had to find someone who was on, he spoke his love language.
Oh, which is, I have to cry.
Nerdery.
Oh, they're, it's so sweet. It was so romantic.
They're so perfect for each other. And I love that one, Tabitha, like, very gently being like, hey, maybe you'll actually do what I asked you to do.
Yeah, it was so cute.
This time. I don't know. Maybe. She likes him and she's almost afraid to like him. So she's like, okay, I need to put some space between us. It's very much Cheryl and Tony of we are from two different places and we have two very different life experiences, but I am willing to hold your hand and move gently through it. Oh, the romance.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
The romance, I love it so much.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want Tabitha to go.
Me neither.
I will say, watching this scene, so I was sitting here and I was like, this girl has superpowers and doesn't even know it.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you forget.
Yeah.
But, like, Tabitha can travel through time.
I'm like, if that's not our Tabitha, then how the heck are we going to get back?
That's every once in a while, like, I'll get so swept up and like, oh, I love this and I love this. And I'm like,
yeah,
this isn't actually the show we were watching. What's going on?
I'm just like, listen, I'm having fun, but it's not going to be a satisfying ending if you just said, yeah, all the characters that you loved died in a comet accident. I'm not gonna be happy.
I will laugh.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, JK, that's the end of Riverdale. They're all dead now. I'm like,
are you kidding me?
So you're doing the ending that people thought that Lost had that it didn't really have?
Yeah. Well, okay.
Interesting. All I will say is these two are so endgame that it's like Jugatha, I don't, whatever it is, and Shoni are very much the I will find you in any universe trope. And I think that's nice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh my god, if somebody has made like that, like a fic of Jugatha, I will read it, where they like find each other in every universe. Yeah, 100%, I will be there.
Oh my god, the Soulmate AU? Oh yes, I would read that.
The Soulmate AU, exactly, exactly, exactly.
I love the Soulmate AU, I'm such a sucker for it.
Someone's got a Jughead Tabitha, I will be there.
I guarantee it will pull up. I guarantee it exists.
I will pull up, send me a link.
Legit, drop the AO3, let's go.
Let's do it.
So Jughead is alone in Brad's apartment and still going through his things when there's a knock at the door. He opens it to find some woman holding her cat. I want to pet the cat.
Yeah.
She says, hey, RIP Brad, but also I'm out of milk. And did that dead guy have any leftover milk in his fridge?
How rude. How rude.
The audacity of this woman.
Yeah.
Jughead invites her in and says, yeah, no, he doesn't have any milk. And she's like, well, that's strange because I have some clues for you. A few nights ago, she heard the milkman making a late night delivery to his apartment. And I'm like, what are you implying? You said it was an unusual late night delivery. Were they lovers?
Yeah.
Did you think they were lovers?
Oh, the milkman and Brad.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like, well, he doesn't have a wife. I don't know.
I don't know. Whatever floats your boat.
He doesn't live with a woman. Yeah.
She and her cat both know the distinct rattle of the glass bottles and that it's Miss Kitty's favorite noise in the world. The episode horrifically ends here with Jughead realizing, oh, right, the milkman.
The milkman.
The milk for the man, the milk from the man. Milkman's poison.
The milkman's poison, yeah. I was like, first of all, I was like, Kate, why did you knock if you know that he's dead? How you...
She probably heard sounds in there. And heard people.
Yeah, I'm sure that she knew that Jughead and Tabitha and somebody was around there.
Exactly.
But imagine that she's just like, can I steal this man's milk? Her name is Mrs. Martin, which made me so happy because, you know, Cole played a character named Cody Martin. So I just love that her name was Mrs. Martin. And yeah, I was kind of scared that it was like the milkman who actually knocked on the door originally.
Oh my god.
I thought Jughead was going to open the door to the milkman.
Be like, well, 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 you are not Tabitha.
If it isn't Melvin.
If it isn't my old nemesis, Melvin the milkman.
Yep.
But they're not actually nemesis. Nemesis I for Nemesi. Murder. It's that Jughead is lactose intolerant.
And speaking of, Blanche said, I already said this in the Discord, but please don't feed your kitties cow's milk. They're actually lactose intolerant and it's bad for them in real life.
Oh my god, you want to see a cat shit its pants, you feed it cow's milk.
Mrs. Martin, you're a bad cat mom.
Yeah, that's Big Dairy lobbying for cats to drink milk.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm just talking.
You guys, that's the end of the episode, and we're actually halfway through the season now. There are 20 episodes this season. This was episode 10. We are half done.
That's crazy to me.
Yes, one more episode, and we actually get a one-week hiatus, and we're meant to get another one-week hiatus at some point as well, which will be great, and I am excited to have a little bit of a tiny little baby break.
I like that it's great for us, but everyone who's, like, watching it, like, regularly and doesn't make content get it over with. Like, I want more. Besties, I get it.
I'm like, this takes over my weekend every single weekend. I would love to have a weekend.
What's a weekend?
You know?
I've never heard of it.
Don't know. No. So our first segment is, what did Blanche think? She told me that she didn't have a voicemail, but she did want to say that she wants everyone to know that she's sad they had a whole car plot and they didn't talk about Gladys at all. So there you go.
Okay, here's the thing. Blanche's Gladys is my river song.
Yeah, oh, I know.
Where, like, when she's not in the show, I'm like, why aren't you mentioning her? This would be the perfect place to mention her. I get it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, Blanche's Gladys is my Dr. Curdle Jr.
Exactly.
Except I'm more well-fed, because we still see him a little bit sometimes.
Literally, Gladys is her Blorbo.
Yeah, exactly. My segment is, which character needs a hug the most? I want to give it to June.
Oh, that's a perfect answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was gonna...
Honorable mention, Reggie.
I was gonna say Reggie, but he got lots of hugs from Archie. Were they a little rough? Yes.
Yeah.
But he still got them.
Yeah, but...
And my segment is, which MILF was the most badass? And there were no badass MILFs. I am once again being starved.
Yeah.
Which is
MILFless.
So rude. So instead, I'm just so gonna terrible. Give... who has MILF energy?
Oh, wait, what about June? She's not a mom, potentially, but...
She is badass.
She's old enough to be MILFy.
She's badass, she's rebellious, she's strong. Yeah, June.
Perfect. Perfect. What is Sam shipping the most? Sam said that she's shipping Shoni the most. If I could, like, weasel my way in there a little bit, it's Jugatha for me, y'all.
I was literally gonna say, I'm shipping Jugatha, also Shoni.
It's Jugatha for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, Shoni was great as well, yeah.
Oh, of course.
Asexual Jughead, ? The answer is yes, always yes. I don't care. That man is ace as hell.
Here's the thing. Jughead and Tabitha are so good together that they could literally, like, have sex and we'd be like, No, this is still great.
Yeah, it's great.
This is still fine. This is something. It's some ace thing. It's still something.
Yeah. And Archie and Reggie across the board here. My best line award goes to Archie and Reggie for...
Like I said, he was my best friend. I've never really had one since.
What about Betty? Or what's his name? Beef Soup? Soup Can? You mean Jughead? Yeah, Jughead.
Beef Soup?
Beef Soup?
Soup Can?
Can? Jughead? You know what? Reggie was right for that.
It was so cute.
And mine goes to Archie and Reggie for...
Like we learned in Spanish class.
Mi casa es tu casa.
They're so stupid.
They were so just like smiley and happy. It was so cute.
And my honorable mention goes to Veronica for...
What about the boys? With all due respect to those wet rags, who cares about the boys?
Me too, babe.
Respect. Respect.
For different reasons, but me too.
Sam's goes to Archie and Reggie for...
I thought you could use a hand souping her up a little.
I could. That's why I asked Betty.
Genius. Iconic. I love it.
Betty's like,
Amazing.
You guys are just so streets behind.
And Blanche's also goes to Reggie and Archie for...
Am I grounded?
No.
I just love the way that he said it.
They're stupid.
No.
They're stupid.
So good. So good. Trailer.
Trailer.
Are you ready for Halloween in June?
I want you to know, I am ready for Halloween 24/7.
Always. Yeah. Okay, the blurb. Halloween in Riverdale. Veronica decides to host a ghost show after learning that Riverdale doesn't celebrate Halloween the way she's used to in LA. Betty makes the most out of her night with Archie and Reggie, and Jughead makes a major discovery in a mystery brewing in Riverdale.
Bum, bum, bum.
Ooh. So Veronica says to Reggie, Archie, Betty, and Tony, we're going to host a ghost show.
A ghost?
Tongue twister. Host a ghost show.
I will be your host. Your ghost.
Ghost host. So we see people at the masquerade party. Jughead says to Keller, we have a killer milkman at large. We see Jughead peeking out from behind something. Iconic. I'm just like,
he's such a cool dude.
And all of this is happening and Ethel is still at the sisters.
Can you imagine being Jughead and finding out a milkman's murder and he's like, oh yeah, Ethel's not crazy.
She's like, oh crap, Ethel was right. Ethel was right.
Yikes.
Let's just leave her in there for now though.
Yeah, she's fine.
Archie, we see him drinking out from a milk carton and we do a hard zoom in on it. We see Melvin watching creepily from behind a translucent curtain. We see Betty gasping at Archie saying, there's someone out there. Cheryl, we see her dancing in a black and white cheerleading outfit and Tony dancing in that same outfit later. We see Julian hitting a mailbox with a bat dressed as a skeleton. Julian, I have not missed you.
I hate that man.
In the slightest. We see Veronica dressed as a little witch, and she says, one of the most phantasmagoric nights of the year. We see Betty's eyes. We see Betty in the car shop making out with Archie and Reggie at the same time. And then it turns out it was just another fantasy. And she goes, sorry, what? In real life. And you know what? It was funny.
The girl is too horny to function, and I respect her for it.
It was funny and cute because it wasn't the entire trailer.
Yeah.
It was cute and I laughed because it didn't take over the entire thing.
Fair enough.
And I love that. All right, Halloween in June. Looking forward to it.
I'm ready. It's halfway to Halloween.
Yep. Thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Our music is Terminal by Good News Tunes.
Thank you to those who shared space with us while we recorded. Thanks to my dog, except he barked a couple times, so I didn't care for that. Daily.
Nice together daily. Thank you to Emily and Sam as also, and Kobe, who just got back from the vet and is a bald bitch right now, and he took it like a champ.
Yep, bald as hell.
Thank you to Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, for writing our scene by scene notes. Love that for her. Love that for us. Appreciate her a lot.
Yes, truly, like every single time when she's like, I'm done my notes, I'm like, oh my god, this has saved me so much time and headache getting her to do it. And it's just like, it's life changing.
She's a lifesaver.
Thank you so much. If you're a fan of The 100, we'd like to talk about that show too. We did seasons 4 to 7 as they were airing, and now we're going back to the good old days. We're in the middle of season 2. We did season 3 already, and we'll get back to that as soon as Riverdale's over.
Yeah. If you're a fan of Stranger Things, we'd like to talk about that show too. We are currently on hiatus, but we are covering season 4.
Yes, and we are going to... The goal is to get the first 4 episodes of season 4 done this year.
Yes.
If you're a fan of Lost, we'd like to talk about that show too. If you heard about the news, we'll be putting out a discussion and conversation about that on June 9th, if you want to check that out. But until then, we did put out our The Constant episode, which I was really, really proud of. And so I'd really appreciate it if you checked it out despite everything.
Yes, and if you didn't hear the news, go follow Mo Ryan on Twitter.
Yes, and we will be talking about it and sort of summarizing it all in our episode that's going to come out on the 9th. So
fantastic. You can follow the Aficionados on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our new TikTok.
Please and thank you. Our Patreon is patreon.com/theaficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating. It is expensive with our money, and it's also expensive with our time, so we'd really, really appreciate your help over there. Lots of different tiers that you can join. If not, check out our small businesses or recommend us to a friend, because that's free and it still helps.
Yes. You can follow me on Twitter at Britannia, which is B-R-I-T-T-A-N-I-A with an underscore at the end.
And you can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey. That's R-O-B-Y-N-E-J-E-F-F-R-E-Y pretty much everywhere. Our next episode is episode 711. Fun. It's called Halloween 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
This is very, very fun because we had an episode that's just called straight up Halloween seasons ago. And now this is Halloween 2, which is very fun.
There's nothing I love more than a Halloween episode. I am a Halloween bitch through and through.
Halloween 2 is a 1981 American slasher film starring Jamie Lee Curtis and Donald Pleasance, who reprise their respective roles as Laurie Strode and Dr. Sam Loomis. It is the second installment in the Halloween film series and is a continuation sequel to Halloween, which came out in 1978. The plot picks up directly after the cliffhanger ending of the first film, with Michael Myers following survivor Laurie Strode to the local hospital, where it's a psychiatrist, Dr. Loomis, continues his pursuit of him.
Here's the thing. From what I understand, they decided the only movie that actually happened was Halloween. So the actual sequel is Halloween 20, I think it was like 2017 or something.
Oh, okay.
They've rewritten the lore of that franchise so many times.
I really love the idea of having like an episode forever ago and then being like, but this is the sequel to that episode.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with that.
Seasons later. So funny. I love it. Looking forward to it.
Same.
Okay, love you, bye!
Okay, love you, bye!